Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Support for The Common comes from Davis Malm. Their tax attorneys take the time to understand your unique goals and find the most cost-effective ways to accomplish them, distilling complex tax laws down to clear choices so you can make the best decisions. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com.
Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it. Because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. A police shooting of a 20-year-old UMass Boston student in Cambridge has the community demanding answers and calls into question how law enforcement engages people in mental distress. WBUR's Deb Becker has been following this incident, and she is here with us now to tell us more about it. Deb, thanks so much for talking with us about this important story.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, Deb, you covered a community meeting in Cambridge last week about the shooting of Arif Syed Faisal. Describe the scene for us.
Yeah, I would say it was tense, Daryl. Hundreds of people attended this meeting at the Martin Luther King School Auditorium, and they were frustrated. They were angry. Faisal was shot on January 4th, and what we know so far, based on statements from law enforcement, is that someone called 911 and said that they saw a man jump out of an apartment window and he had a knife. Police say they chased him for about 10 minutes through the Cambridgeport neighborhood. He wouldn't drop the weapon. They shot a non-lethal sponge round at him to try to get him to drop the weapon. He still didn't drop it. And so they shot him and he died later at Massachusetts General Hospital. The community wants answers. Why was he shot? Why wasn't some other type of intervention used? And what does this say about how Cambridge police are responding to mental health crises?
Understood. How have city officials dealt with this response?
So what they say, Daryl, is that this matter is under investigation. Basically, the district attorney is doing an investigation. There's an independent judicial inquest happening at the moment where a judge will review all of the evidence, all of the documents, hear from witnesses, and issue a report on exactly what happened. Because That's going on right now. They say they can't release a lot of details about what happened. And they also can't because they haven't told the family some of those details. So they don't want to release information before the family knows about it first. And I think people were really concerned about that. And here's a little bit of tape from Police Commissioner Christine Elo when she told people she's really working to help rebuild trust in the community, but she just can't talk about this right now.
This investigation has to move forward. We have to let the district attorney do our job, and then there's going to be more conversation after that. I am absolutely committed to healing. I am absolutely committed to trying to build trust, you know, across all of our community.
And what did you hear from the community members?
I think the community members are skeptical, Daryl, right? I think that they think that this should not have happened. There should be more information. They think that officials can give more details, for example, the name of the officer involved. They want to know why the officer is on paid administrative leave and why he wasn't fired. And also, I spoke with muralist David Fichter, who actually worked with Faisal when Faisal was a student, and he helped him paint a mural, and he described Faisal as a very sweet kid and said, why are there no body cameras in Cambridge on police?
I just think we all have to work together and hold ourselves accountable, all of us, for not making sure there were cameras to begin with and not making sure the change in how police interact with people who are in mental distress or having some kind of a problem is different than a bank robber or something like that. Not that I think bank robbers should be shot if they can, but...
And so, Daryl, you know, while he was advocating for body cameras that might provide more definitive answers in a case like this, there were others who said they were concerned about giving up privacy rights if police were wearing body cameras. So that is still a matter of debate in Cambridge. But overall, I would say the community members are frustrated and they want more information and they want to understand exactly how police are trained to respond when someone is in distress.
Okay, to the point of someone being in distress, you also recently published a piece about a lawsuit involving a police shooting in Newton several years ago, where police there shot a man who was suffering from mental health issues. Do you see any connections between these two cases?
Well, there are definite similarities in these cases. In both instances, a man had a knife, and in both, police first used a non-lethal weapon to try to keep the man away from the knife. Ultimately, police shot both of these men, and they both died. So there's a lot to be said about police training in these situations. In the Newton case, a social worker was with police at the time, but because the man in question, 28-year-old Michael Conlon, had a weapon, they wouldn't let the social worker out of the police cruiser. So the social worker never negotiated with Michael Conlon. And his parents, who have filed suit, they say that that's a real issue here. If you have mental health workers responding to these types of crises, then they should be allowed to respond. But of course, safety is an issue. And I've spoken with folks about this, and they say that, you know, there's no standard for when social workers or mental health professionals can or cannot respond in these situations. It's up to each individual department to ensure the safety of the mental health clinician and to try to diffuse the crisis at hand. It's a question that hasn't been answered, really.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university. shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. What can we expect moving forward with the investigation in Cambridge? You know, do you see law enforcement officials there taking different steps? Because I guess it's somewhat of a sensitive issue when it comes to mental health.
It is a sensitive issue. There have been some steps taken in Cambridge. There is a program in Cambridge, actually a citizen-led program, to help the community respond rather than law enforcement respond to mental health emergencies. And the city has promised to provide some funding for that initiative. So there are steps being taken. There is improved training of law enforcement. There's a new center in Massachusetts that simultaneously trains law enforcement with social workers so they can understand and perhaps collaborate better on these types of calls. But you know what was interesting, Daryl? I spoke with Middlesex County District Attorney Marion Ryan after the meeting in Cambridge last week, and she was very candid. And she said, we're still working on this, and it's a work in progress.
One thing that's clear is we have a problem when it comes to mental health issues. We don't have a good solution. We've tried, you know, Middlesex County's large. We have lots of communities. We've tried different things. We have co-responder models. We have ride-alongs. We have lots of those models. None of them are perfect.
And so, Daryl, I think that's the message, really, is that folks are working on this, but as police have increasingly become first responders to mental health crises, there are a lot of issues that still need to be addressed.
So, Deb, you know, when we think of police shootings, oftentimes racial bias tends to come up. And I'm wondering, with Faisal being Bangladeshi, did that come up in your reporting?
Well, there are folks who question whether racial bias was an issue here. This is the first fatal police shooting in Cambridge in 20 years. And there's not a lot of data, but the Washington Post has a national database. And that database indicates that since 2015, there have been 55 people killed by police in Massachusetts, and 20% of those folks were identified as Black. But of course, in Massachusetts, our population is about 7% Black. So folks who are Black are disproportionately killed by police, according to the database. We know it happens nationally, and it appears that it happens here in Massachusetts as well.
Okay, so it sounds like race is coming up in these conversations. But the big question here is about how police respond to calls involving mental health.
I would say the main focus in Cambridge is on mental health and on how to make sure that when someone is having a behavioral health crisis and police are called, as they usually are, that that doesn't have some sort of tragic ending, which unfortunately we see all too often.
Right.
And I will say, during the meeting, former Cambridge Mayor Ken Reeves, who's now with the NAACP, did speak about this and said the investigation that's done by the district attorney that's expected to take several months, that there should really be a priority placed on this investigation to get it done sooner and to provide answers quicker to the community.
We're going to have the Cambridge that we want. That's why I spent the better part of my life trying to live in one place in America where I can walk down the street and not worry that somebody's going to call me the N-word or beat me up or shoot me up or any of those things. And so I'm committed to that, and I want you to be committed to it, too.
So basically what he's saying there, Daryl, is Cambridge could be better than this, and we need to figure out how to make that happen.
Understood. Now, during this discussion, we mentioned two incidents, one that happened in Cambridge, one in Newton. You know, these are two separate municipalities. I kind of want to zoom out and ask you to talk about how state officials and law enforcement officials at the state level, how are they approaching this issue of police training and mental health?
I think, as D.A. Ryan indicated there, and the other folks I've spoken with the Massachusetts Association of Major City Police Chiefs and others, they say something very similar. They say, we know that this is a problem, and we know that our training falls short in terms of how we balance protecting public safety and also responding to these mental health calls in a way that doesn't end in tragedy. And I think they're honest to a large degree about some of the shortcomings. But at this point, they don't have clear answers, really, as to how they're going to make that better.
Understood. Now, I hear there's another meeting taking place this evening, actually. What will you be covering there?
There's a meeting of the city council that is going to be talking specifically about police training, police protocols, procedures, funding, and what to do to try to improve the situation in terms of police responding to issues such as this.
Got it. Well, Deb, thank you so much for talking with us about this story, this very unfortunate yet, you know, very important story. So thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Please hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at WBUR The Common, or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.